Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. My name is Aaron Snow. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions as we travel the world for past, present, and future stars. We bring you the boxing news, the interviews, and the legend tales, and boxing history, and coming to you live from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. How you doing, Bob?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Hello, yes, and welcome in to another edition of the World Boxing Review Radio Show. Yes, beautiful day here in Schuylkill County, but man, we've had some another outbreak of the coronavirus hitting Schuylkill County pretty hard the last couple of weeks.
Yeah, absolutely, and you know what, Bob? It hit Schuylkill County pretty hard. You know, last week we covered the Pottsville High School football. They're doing very well. My nephew and his team. But you know what happened, Bob? Yes,
right.
A big outbreak. Something happened with the team that they were playing, North Schuylkill. A couple players, it seems like they had came down with the virus. To my understanding, a teacher and some players. So they had to cancel the big game, man, and it was going to be a big game. North Schuylkill undefeated, and Pottsville High 3-1, man. This was going to be a real co-region football, as I called on a Friday night with the, you know, the autumn, that foliage that are in the trees, you know, that football in the coal region, boy, it's second to none, Bob.
Right. And you know what? The other thing about this game, too, was going to be a big event, too, because unfortunately last year we remember the young man from North Schuylkill, Ned Leiby, who was paralyzed on the football field playing Pottsville last year, and it was going to be a tribute for him. He's doing fine, but, you know, still a long road to recovery, but part of the underlying story, too, of that North Schuylkill-Pottsville High game last night. But hey, Nativity play, but they lost to Monroe City, so we're 4-2 now. But anyway, kind of rough, you know, we're looking at roughly like 307 new cases in the county since the beginning of the month, and there's now 71 dead. Also, on Thursday, there was a new high, taking it all the way back to the beginning of this thing in February and March, 38 cases on Thursday. And there's now 365 cases in Pottsville. That's up from 47 from a week ago. So these numbers are just starting to be like bigger than they were when this whole thing started.
Yeah, absolutely, Bob. And we say week in and week out, you know, when this outbreak first happened and everything was closing down and stuff way back in March. The information that we were given in our research for the information, we were telling people to protect themselves at all time, that this thing is serious. And to the day, it still remains serious, that you have to be very cautious, be aware, keep your, because you don't know what you touch to get it. You know, the virus could be on a countertop or something. That hasn't been wiped down and the virus is lingering on. You could go up a pair of, you know, iron rail steps and touch it and come down. You know, it's so many different ways where this virus hangs out. And, you know, the main thing that they were saying is the social distancing. You know, you're around people, man. If you want to talk, just keep the distance. You can still talk. Just keep the distance. And make sure you're masked up, and when you go home, you wash your face, your hands throughout the day, all the time, because you can wash your hands and then go touch it and still get it. And not to be to bring paranoia onto our listeners or anything, we just want y'all safe, man, and keep on living so y'all can keep listening to the boxing show. I think that we try to bring entertainment with our show, and also to help promote boxing, and boxing is trying to get through that, and there's been some people that lost their lives in the boxing family and throughout the world, you know. Hey, man, this thing is serious, and we have to look at it and continue to look at it serious. And we ask that God continue to bless each and every one of us and protect each and every one of us. And also that if we get it, that we don't become seriously ill, you know, and that we don't be put in a heavy trial. Yeah. Yeah, so Bob, what do we got here? We got a big fight tonight, and we're going to be talking about the great lightweight champions because it's a lightweight fight tonight. But we'll let you go around the world, and you know, we'll bring that fight on, and then we'll get into those great lightweight champions. So what do we got happening around the world, Bob?
We'll also touch base on a couple of things that happened in the heavyweight division as well, too, and a few other pieces of news we'll bring you. But right now, like you're mentioning, we're starting out at the bubble, the MGM Grand, Las Vegas, Nevada, USA, and it's the big lightweight unification title fight between Vasyl Lomachenko, 14-1, 10 knockouts. He's the WBA Super World and a WBO World Champion. And Teofilo Lopez, he's undefeated, 15-0, 12 knockouts, and he's the IBF World Title Holder. That's going to be on ESPN, regular TV, and Canal Space TV for Latin America. Big undercard topped with the Alex Saucedo, 30-1, 19 knockouts, versus Arnold Barboza Jr. He's undefeated, 24-0, 10 KOs. It's a 10-round super lightweight clash. And there's another 10-round super lightweight matchup when 17-1 with 9 knockouts, Josu Vargas steps in with Kendo Castaneda, who's 17-2, 8 KOs. Elsewhere in the U.S., we have two venues in Florida, one in Miami, where the Mark Bern Valdez, 20-4 versus Julian Evaristo Aristul, 34-13, super featherweight contest, tops the card there. And one in Lakeland, where heavyweights Brandon Moore and Vessel Webster meet up. Windham, New Hampshire will also close their show with a heavyweight battle, this one pitting Daniel Martz, 19-9-1, against Michael Marrone, 21-11. Sky TV and DAZN will be in Peterborough, UK, with Lewis Riston, 20-1, 12 knockouts, and Miguel Vasquez, 42-9, 16 knockouts, vie for the WBA Intercontinental Super Lightweight Crown. Two super bantamweight battles are also now on the undercard, since the one fight that we were looking forward to was Savannah Marshall fighting for the WBO World Female Middleweight title against Hannah Rankin. But Marshall's trainer, Peter Fury, who's Tyson's uncle, he came down positive, and in case that name's familiar, Savannah Marshall, she's the only person in the universe to defeat Clarissa Shields. Did that back when they were amateurs. So, unfortunately, Marshall didn't get a chance to step out tonight, but that will be rescheduled. That's some of the point. But anyway, back to the venue. It's Kais Ashraf. He's 8-0. He takes out 14-1-1 Mark Leach. And then there's also followed by Thomas, undefeated, 29-0, versus Thomas Asamba, 10-6. Across the channel now to Paul Saint-Maxence, France, for the super middleweight feature of Daniel Blinda Dos Santos versus Zura Mehrchouvili. Valdemar ends their night with the Mevi Bufudi Karim Manasaria welterweight showdown. A couple of big shows in Germany tonight, beginning in Donauwörth, highlighted by the Emma, the Princess Kozan, 19-0-1, 10 KOs, defending her WBF World Female and Women's IBA World, and seeking the WBC World Female Middleweight title as she crosses the ropes with challenger Chris Namas, 25-5, 8 KOs, who is a former IBF World Female Super Welterweight Champion. Topping the undercard is the fight for three vacant World Female Welterweight titles, the WBC Youth, the WBF, and the IBA, between the hometown favorite Jessica Shatko, she's 8-0, and the new Irish phenom, 20-year-old Caitlin Phelan, she's 3-0. Also, Fatih Dubuz and John Marsalek duke it out for the WBF International Super Lightweight strap. Brandenburg hosts three GBC title bouts, topped with the 14-0 Mike Jane, trading punches with Oscar Fico, 33-28-1, for the Open World Super Welterweight belt. Also, is Denny Lehman, 17-6-2, 14-17 wins by KO, defending his world middleweight crown against Itzvan Zeller, 38-30. And both Diwar El Sheikh, 11-0, and Hassan Kurdaz, 8-6, vying for the vacant Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship. Over to Vienna, Austria, where middleweights Marcos Nader, 22-1-1, and former interim WBC World Female Bantamweight Champion Eva Warburger, she's 25-7, they form the co-main events. Rome, Italy, headlines with the Marco di Carlantonio versus Marino Bucciarelli welterweight contest. Cruiserweights Luca Bortenzi and Andre Pesce face off in nearby Colleferro. Catania on the island of Sicily ends their show with a light heavyweight mashup between Alessio Stampinato and Gianmarco Schiaffani. Lagos, Nigeria, back in action, features 33-7 local cruiserweight all-rounder Wahu Duradola topping a card, which also holds the battle for the Nigerian featherweight crown between Rilwan Lawal, 9-0, and Friday for Tunji Felix, 13-8. And also Taiwo Oluwu, 7-0, versus Sahi Olajuwola, who's 5-3 for the country's welterweight strap. Soweto, South Africa, has the co-main events, ending with the Zolisani Ndongeni, 26-1, 14 knockouts, versus Prince Delomo. He's 11-10-1 at the lightweight clash. And also Thulani Mbenge, 15-1, versus Marichek Kovisa Katembo, 13-2-1 for the African Boxing Union welterweight belt. In Auckland, New Zealand, they end their night with a lightweight Omar Ismail and Herman Singh meeting up. And in Yinchuan, China, they close their show with the Zhang Tao Cao versus Yang Liang Super Flyweight Contest. There we go, 10 countries kind of holding steady there the last couple of weeks. We've got like 9, 10, and 11. But, again, we're seeing slow improvements. Some other countries getting back in the game today, like we'll talk about Nigeria. It's been a while since we talked about them. So, slowly but surely, we're trying to get ourselves through this whole thing.
Oh, absolutely, Bob. But Bob, it looks like the WBC is has some breaking news here. It's being reported that Mauricio Sulaiman, who's president of the WBC, says that they're creating a new weight class, and it's going to be 224-pound division. In the cruiserweight division, they're changing the weight limits. I think cruiserweight's going to be it's being reported 190 pounds to 200 pounds, and then they're creating. It looks like they're trying to create a super heavyweight division and a heavyweight division, which would be a mark in boxing second to none. With these guys that are being so big. Like a Tyson Fury or whatever, that are really big and the other guys are really small. And they said over 200 pounds is the heavyweight division. But what happens when you get like Nikolai Value, who was that 7 foot, close to weighing 300 pounds when he fights and all that, and to fight a guy 216 pounds, 215 pounds. So this is truly going to be a mark in boxing history with this added weight class, being that the WBC is one of the leaders in boxing. And we're going to have to wait and see if the other boxing organizations, such as the IBF, the WBA, if all of them follow suit in that. And what that does, Bob, it creates a whole new division, whole new titles, and whole guys fighting for championships. So maybe this is when we talk about boxing, why Tyson Fury says he ain't fighting Dante Wilder. Maybe this is the answer, Bob, that we've been waiting for. You know, Tyson Fury said he's going to stay over in England and he's going to fight over in England, and maybe this is it, Bob. So what breaking news, man?
And you think about like next week, do we have, or actually a couple weeks from now, the Usyk fight? You know, he's coming up from the cruiserweight division. He's probably going to check in somewhere in the low 200s. You know, and again, that's what you're talking about as far as these guys. You know, what happens when they go against a guy like Fury? You know, but yeah, Fury. They're talking about maybe he's going to fight on the 5th of December still, but. It's not going to be Fury, and it's going to—I mean, a Wilder. It's going to be maybe Kabayel or Zagba. But you know whose name's also in there is Michael Hunter, who, of course, we've talked about it that he has defeated Tyson Fury back in the amateur days too. And also another thing we want to talk about that date—it's been confirmed now that it's going to be Anthony Joshua and Kubrapulev at the O2 Arena. That's a definite go, as of yesterday too. So we see that happening. As well, but it's going to get busy there in the heavyweight division just to see who Fury fights, what Wilder is going to do after this too now, and of course the Joshua Pulev fight happening, and we talked about Usyk at Chisora next week too. So There you go. Yeah, some busy news indeed.
Yeah, absolutely, Bob. You know, with that when that heavyweight division's going, you know, and we got a boxing promoter who got $1 billion to put boxing on the network, and he's running into all of these problems. Like I all the time say, when Don King ruled boxing for, now they see the complex problems that he ran into, and with lawsuits and this one saying they ain't get paid, that one saying they ain't get paid, this and that and this and that. Now, Hearns, who has $1 billion, is seeing how difficult it is with contracts and that big time money and people greedy and not needy, and you know how all that goes. The problems that are that you run into trying to keep it all together, and then with this pandemic, not having a crowd, you can't have a crowd in the arena and stuff. You know, hopefully that you can get a crowd on their streaming, on the streaming platform or television. But all the ratings are down, Bob, and this is not good for boxing. It's not good.
Right, they're down all around, too. Yeah, we saw the whole NBA Finals were down. And even though you have the big star LeBron in there, you know, it just didn't do the numbers. And the World Series, we're still waiting to see who's going to match up in that. Some good baseball series going on, but again, numbers are down. But getting back to that the zone thing too, just want to mention the latest news on that lawsuit too. That's dragging things down with Canelo Alvarez. You know, it was trying to be pushed up to a federal case, and then some other lawyers came in and said, "Well, we should make it a new California case." So the lawyers are lawyering. You know, it's still a question, man. You know, it's a problem. You know, we want to see Alvarez. You know, let's go.
Yeah, and Bob, you know, we said this from the beginning. You know, with a big contract and that money during the pandemic, you know, it's just tough for a boxing promoter. You know, even though he has TV money, to put on a show and to live up to that, you know, that kind of contract. And you can see with even football and basketball, they're having the same problems. You know, viewership is down with the NBA championship, and hockey viewership was down, you know, across the board. Baseball was down. So when all of those major sports are down, it's definitely going to affect boxing, and boxing's down. So like I all the time say, when you're in something like this, some business model is, say, you have to do niche marketing, and you have to know where the people are at, and you have to market the product wherever the people are at and where the eyeballs are at. And this is what everyone's going to have to do as continues to go on. One thing that we learned, Bob, is that through this thing, and even with our show, listening went down, but it's coming back up. You know, during the pandemic, we've seen strong peaks a couple times. We got crashed from around the world with the people listening, you know. So.
Right.
Yeah. So, but it's going up, as you well know, Bob. And we just want to tell the listeners, just keep tuning in, because when we didn't have nothing to talk about, when boxing wasn't going on, people really didn't want to listen, because they listen to our show, because we cover what's happening in boxing weeks forward, and people use us on a Saturday to find out what's coming up. What has been happening, what's going on major in boxing. So we just ask people, just continue to tune in, and we'll keep trying to bring you the best in boxing news of what's going on, our synopsis.
Right. And a couple of things I just want to mention, too. Speaking of that, at the end of the world trip, I wanted to mention too, but Sergey Lipinets, we've been listening about that. He's going to fight Cusio Clayton now for that interim IBF welterweight title on Friday. And Abdulkakarov, we mentioned he had visa problems. Well, he still had the visa problems, so he's out. So that's just a little note for Friday night. But something else that we talked about, new new platforms. A group calling themselves Ring City USA, it's a new broadcast and content platform. They're teaming up with NBC Sports beginning November 19th. So there's NBC getting back into the fight game. It's been a long time for that, too. So, you know, even though there's problems, there's a new platform to check out beginning in about a month.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, this is what happens. People see, you know, what's happening with streaming content where people are looking at stuff online heavily. And they're using their handheld devices, tablets, and all that. And, Bob, way back when, I must say, Bob, way back when we were pitching this a long time ago, maybe this been 10, 15 years, Bob, when we used to do our show online, we used to say this was the wave of the future, Bob. And I want to thank you, Bob, for the great vision that you had to see where radio was going down the line. And it helped us when we reorganized to get a platform that was strong for us to start doing it online. And we went out and did it, man. And this is what's putting us in the hunt, Bob.
Right. It's actually started back at the old WPAM radio here in Pottsville back in 2006, man. That's quite a while, yeah.
And Bob, you know what we're going to have to do? Some of those old shows with Aaron Pryor, when Aaron Pryor was on, Tommy Hearns, and those great champions that were on our show back then. One weekend, we'll just play a couple of them, and that would be the show. I think the viewing listeners will listen to that. You know, because Aaron Pryor, he's not here. He's passed and moved forward. May the Lord bless him where he's at, and hope he end up in paradise. But, you know, he did a great interview on the show and everything. But talking about Aaron Pryor, man, there's them great fights that he has. There's a great fight going on tonight. Bob, what's the fight? The big fight tonight. Come on, Bob, tell us that lightweight fight. Come on, man.
Yeah, Lomachenko, man. Yeah, Vasyl Lomachenko, 14-1, and he's it's a big unification fight. WBA Super World, WBO World Champ, and Teofimo Lopez, undefeated at 15-0. He's the IBF World Title holder, and it's going to be on ESPN. And you know, it's going to be a great fight. You're looking at again a couple great lightweights. We'll be talking more about lightweights as we get on into the program a little bit more, but. This is, you know, Lomachenko, when you talk pound for pound, his name's always up there near the top, too. And Lopez, he's kind of, you know, he's talking a lot. He's saying he's the greatest, but, you know, he needs to come out and prove it tonight and see if he can take out the big Ukrainian.
Yeah, and Bob, let me tell you, both of them weighed in last night, and both of them made the weight 135
pounds. Right at 135, right on the button.
You know, when you're talking about greatness in that 135-pound championship titles, man, there's been a lot of greats and Hispanic greats, but that's why we have our boxing historian, Henry Haskop, online. We're going to bring him in, and we're going to cover some of this stuff. We're going to talk about tonight's fight, our outlook, what's going to happen. Our boxing historian, no other than Henry Haskop, man. Thank you for coming on the show this morning, Henry. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. I hear you guys, and, you know, I can't wait for tonight. And, you know, this is the first real big fight that we had since the virus came out, so I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, and plus it's on the ESPN. ESPN.
That's a real plus because you know, boxing needs a shot in the arm. You know, if they put it on pay-per-view, I'm sure they would get a lot of people that would buy it. But this is you know, free TV, and man. People, any boxing fan or even casual boxing fan should, you know, jump on this because it's going to be, you know, on paper, it's going to be pretty darn good. You know, you got the technician, you know, the guy that can move this way and that way and, you know, like no other person ever did. And then you got this guy, young whippersnapper coming up at 23 years old. It's, you know, knockout artist that's knocking everybody out. And it's So, you know, the boxer against the puncher, and, you know, we'll see what happens. But, you know, I just hope that they're not rushing, you know, Lopez a little too soon. You know, I mean, he only had 15 fights. You know, I know Lomachenko only had 15, but he also had almost 400 amateur fights, too. And, you know, so, I mean, several years ago, there was another 23-year-old. They were hyping up really big. And, you know, he went against Mayweather. And, you know, he got schooled. You know, it was Canelo. You know, after the fight, you know, they said, oh, he was just rushed too fast at that time. And, of course, he became one of the all-time greats after that. But, you know, I'm just hoping that, you know, he's ready for this and see what happens, you know.
Yeah, well, you know, Henry, I'm going to tell you, like some wise old guys used to tell me about grooming a fighter. You never know how good a young, undefeated fighter is until he meets a fighter that can fight and everybody know that he can fight. And what's going to happen, what I see in this fight is, you know, with a lot of knockouts, you know, young guys get overconfident. And greatness happens through the period of the test of time, the different challenges that are put in front of a fighter and if he can overcome them. I'm going to use this into something that I knew. In another weight class, Julian Jackson. You know, Julian Jackson was clocking everybody, and I mean, his punching power was second to none. He got the opportunity to fight Mike McCollum, the body snatcher, at 154 pounds. And Julian Jackson, with all that energy and all that punching power and that youth, he jumped out on Mike McCollum. And, you know, he hit Mike McCollum, and he had him hurt a little bit. But somewhere in a big fight, you're going to have to take a big shot, and you're going to have to overcome that big punch that you get hit with. That's in a big fight. When Mike McCollum weathered the storm of Julian Jackson's barrage by taking his time, picking places, tying him up, hitting him with shots, and Mike McCollum aiming him with a low blow to get him up off of it. And then as it went on and Mike McCollum got himself together, he took his time and picked his shots on Julian Jackson. And when he got Julian Jackson hurt, Julian Jackson, he couldn't recover from that shot. But you can see the youth in the bronze and the experience that Mike McCollum had. And I'm saying this to say this for tonight's fight. With Lomachenko, with all of those great amateur experience that he has, and his arsenal that he has, where he puts great combination punches together, and he's been down that stretch, I think in this fight with him, if he can weather the storm early and go to work and attacking like he puts those punches, those body shots and stuff together and put that kind of pressure on a younger guy, I think that's going to be enough where he comes out the victor. But early he has to watch out.
Lopez is going to come out, you know, strong. And like I said, he might use all his energy up in the first couple of rounds trying to, you know, connect against Lomachenko. And Lomachenko is not the easiest guy to hit. I mean, he hasn't fought since last August, Lomachenko. That's probably the longest time he's been off boxing. But this might be a blessing in disguise for him because he already had a few little injuries here and there, and I think that might have, you know, give him time to heal all them things, you know, and he might be even better than he was, you know, 2 years ago. So, you know, I'm looking forward to him, you know, doing a real, real education against this Lopez. But, you know, like I said, like you said, one punch can change it all.
Yeah, and I tell you what, as we talked in prior shows that during this pandemic, as our show been going on through the pandemic, we talked about earlier how the crowd factor would wage in on a lot of fights. And because of the crowd factor, great champions are great at fighting with all the things that come into a big fight, you know, with the crowd, the media attention, and all that.
Yeah.
And with all of this, you know, Lopez is getting a little break because if there was a crowd factor in, you know, he would, as a young fighter, he would have to deal with that energy and all of that with the large crowds, you walking through the hotels and the casinos and people coming up, shaking your hands, the press conference, and have to deal with all of that that's in that great fight atmosphere.
Yeah, it's
lessened a little bit this year. So, you know, he may have a little edge in that of, you know, things that are displayed in the gym. And I just hope Lomachenko has fought in large audience, large crowd, is that he can still get pumped up and know that this is a real fight and not a gym workout, because, you know, that happens to fighters where,
yeah,
you know, you get in to where there's no crowd, and guys, big time fighters are into the big time crowd. But I think Lomachenko, he's up for this. And like you said, Henry, is that this is something that you wait for, is when you got somebody in front of you, everybody think he can fight, he's a puncher, he's a one-shot knockout artist. And to be great and to be on that platform, you know, you have to have a guy in front of you that everybody thinks that you can fight. And I'll tell you, for instance, in the heavyweight division, Mike Tyson. You had a young lion with Stewart, 26 wins, 26 knockouts, right there in your backyard, Henry, in
yep.
Atlantic City, New
yep.
Jersey. And everybody thought, said, hey, Mike Tyson is in trouble. This kid can fight. He can punch. And they were worrying about a young Mike Tyson going up with a knockout artist like Stewart. But Mike rose to the occasion and knocked Alex Stewart out, you know. And
yeah.
Being young, yeah, young guy like that. And but
yeah.
Henry, you know,
yeah.
Lomachenko might be on the terms of great, but when you hear a Lopez talk about he's one of the and not to bust his ego, you need that in order to get a guy going, you know, to make him pumped up and all that. But, and, you know, the talk and the garbage talk. But let's look at the real deal. When you say you're the greatest light weight champion that ever lived, I don't believe so, because you got to look at Roberto Duran, who was phenomenal. You look at some of Roberto Duran's films and his tapes when he was coming up at 135 pounds. Boy, oh boy, did you see the signs of hitting and not getting hit. And boy, could he whack a person out. After you seen Roberto Duran display how to put combinations together, but had that one knockout shot. And also a young Hector Camacho. Hector Camacho, a Latino fighter, he was something special with that speed that he had. And boy, Hector Camacho could whack him out too. And,
oh yeah,
and
there's a long list of lightweights that were really outstanding. And we talk about like lightweights. You know, we just had our poll with the International Boxing Research Organization. You know, it's better known as IBRO. And just to let you know, mm-hmm. the lightweights in the top 11 of pound per pound results in the top 11.
Right.
You had four lightweights. You know, they like Henry Armstrong, he was a welterweight, lightweight, and featherweight. He was rated in all four divisions, but he was rated number two pound per pound, and he was, you know, most of his career he was right around 135, even though he fought as the welterweight champion of the world, but he was still around 135 all that time. Then number five was Liberto Duran as pound per pound. And then number nine was Benny Leonard, and number 11 was Joe Gans. Now, Joe Gans, he was the first African-American, you know, champion of the world in the modern times. You know, he won it very early in the 20th century, and he had some classic bouts with, let's say, Battle E. Nelson. Darn thing, the one fight went 42 rounds. You know, I mean, that was, you know, I mean, you know, talking about 12, and these guys went 12 and then another 30 rounds after that. I mean, you know, 12 and then two 15 rounders. And, you know, but, you know, like it said, Joe Gans, he was, you know, people like later on used to say Joe Gans was the Sugar Ray Robinson before Sugar Ray Robinson. I mean, that's how he was. And, you know, a lot of the boxing historians from way back, you know, they still rate him, you know, as number one in the lightweight division. Now, of course, Benny Leonard, I mean, he had some classic bouts, you know, with Lou Tendler, Charlie White, and the one against Richie Mitchell. I mean, he knocked Mitchell down three times in the first round, and Mitchell got up, and he caught Leonard with a body shot and then an overhand right, and Leonard went down. And then he was really visibly hurt, and he got up, and Leonard, you know, played the old game. See, come on, come on, come on in, come on in. Let's see what you got. But he and you know, this Mitchell fell for it, you know, and you know, Leonard lasted the round, but the next couple of rounds it was all Mitchell. Mitchell was doing a number on Leonard until around the fifth or sixth round. That's when Leonard kind of guess he got his bearings back, and then he stopped, you know, stopped Mitchell. But there's other great lightweights, like, you know, in the Ibro list and lightweight ratings. Number 10, I'll go from 10 on number 1. Number 10 was Lou Ambers. Now, Lou Ambers, he fought twice against Henry Armstrong. When Armstrong won the lightweight championship of the world, that's who he beat. He beat Lou Ambers. But then in a return match, Lou Ambers actually beat Henry Armstrong. But then in the defense of Armstrong, Armstrong got several rounds taken away from him because of low blows. But still, you know, Lou Ambers, I mean, he was, you know, a really good fighter. I mean, he beat Tony Cancineri twice. You know, he beat Coco Kidd. He beat, you know, Fritzy Zivic. And he was, you know, he was rated number 10 by Ibro as far as the lightweights go. Number 9 was a guy I consider very underrated. You know, when people, you know, talk about lightweights, they very seldom put this guy in there. But he was rated number 9 by Ibro, and that was Carlos Ortiz. I mean, he, you know, he beat, you know, Joe Brown for the championship of the world, and you know, he did a, you know, he was, you know, he was, like I said, a very, very underrated individual. He beat Flash Lorde twice, Ismael Laguna, you know, so he was, you know, I think he beat Sugar Ramos twice, so he was one of the top lightweights of all time. Then number 8, they had Barney Ross. You know, Barney Ross, he lost his welterweight championship of the world to Henry Armstrong, but he was one of the, let's say, one of the all-time greats, you know, as far as welterweight and, you know, lightweight goes. He was a three-division champion. Then number 7 was Ike Williams. You know, Ike Williams, he had classic bouts with Bob Montgomery and Bo Jack, and he was probably one of the maybe two or three top fighters ever to come out of the state of New Jersey, and he was rated number 7. Then Tony Cancineri, he was a three-division world champion. Him and Emil Griffith hold the record of fighting the most times at Madison Square Garden. I mean, he beat, you know, quite a few, you know, individuals. In fact, a lot of people say he could have done a number on Floyd Mayweather Jr. I mean, he beat, you know, guys like Kid Chocolate twice, and, you know, Billy Betrayal, you know, who else, you know, Berg he beat. He beat Lou Ambers once. But he was rated very, very high in a lot of people's mind. And, of course, the next one, number five, we already went over him. That was Henry Armstrong. You know, he was, you know, like he had three titles at the same time, defended his title, you know, umpteen times in the welterweight division. And, you know, they rated him a lot of times as a lightweight because, like I said, his weight was either right around lightweight all the time, if not under the lightweight division, even when he was a welterweight champion. And even today, they rate him, you know, either second or third on the pound per pound list of all-time greats. You know, it's either Robertson, Armstrong, and Harry Greb. That's usually the top three, you know, in the pound per pound.
Mm-hmm.
Number four is a more of a modern guy. That was Pennell Whitaker. You know, he's a defensive whiz, just like Willie Pep, you know, his southpaw. You know, he was hard to hit. And, you know, everybody knows, you know, about him. Then, of course, we already talked about Joe Gans. You know, like I said, he was the first African-American world champion in any division. And he's still, after over 100 years, he's still rated as one of the top, you know, fighters, even in the lightweight division or even the pound-for-pound list on everybody's list. Then, of course, you got Benny Leonard. You know, he was, you know, the master boxer, you know, and, you know, he ruled the roost, you know, for a long time in that lightweight division. And, of course,
Henry, just to say, because his nickname, what they used to call him, they used to call him the ghetto man or the ghetto kid.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Benny Leonard. And he could box his tail off. And that name with Benny Leonard always stuck with his fight name. You know, they had quite a few, but the one, the ghetto kid or the ghetto man.
Yeah. He was you know, one of the best. I mean, you know, no matter what any list. I mean, he beat Jackie Britton twice, Johnny Dundee. He beat Rocky Kansas. You know, who else did he beat? Lou Tendler and Freddie Welch. I mean, they're all-time greats. They're all Hall of Famers, and he beat them all. You know, he was one of the, like I said, one of the top individuals, not only in lightweight division, but all time. And of course, number one, you know, and he just eked out on the vote. We had 31 people voting, and Leonard wound up with 602 points, and Duran beat him out by 12. So that was how close it was. It was 614. So, you know, Roberto Duran, of course, you know, I don't think anybody, we have to say too much about him that people don't know already. I mean, you know, hands of stone. And, you know, he was just a superb fighter. And, you know, I mean, like I said, most people will say the greatest lightweight in the world, if it's not, you know, Gans or Leonard, it would be Duran, you know. I mean, you can't go wrong with either one of them. You know, it's just the times. You know, Gans was a big champion just around the turn of the century, and then 20 years later, it was Benny Leonard. Then, you know, modern times when we know it, you know, it was Roberto Duran. We got a lot of film on Duran, so, you know, that's probably one of the reasons why he's rated higher than the other two, because, you know, the hands of stone and everything, and even in the pound-for-pound list, you know, Duran was rated over Willie Pep and Muhammad Ali and Joe Louis, you know, and also Ray Leonard. So he was is one of the, you know, true greats. And he was inducted into the Atlantic City Hall of Fame last year. You know, he would air, and, you know, it was nice. So But that's, you know, like
a, he put a show on the stage, didn't he? With his
dance. Yeah, I know.
At the induction ceremony. Roberto has always been like that. He's a showman. He started dancing. He had somebody come up and sing, and he went to dancing on stage and tap dancing. Oh, man, doing the boogaloo. Roberto,
that's right.
Boy, everybody was laughing, clearing, clapping, screaming.
Oh, yeah.
But that's Roberto.
I think
Guerrero.
At the end he says I got to go because I have diarrhea. Something like that. I said, oh, jeez. So it was there. But going back to lightweights, there was a classic battles between Bo Jack and Bob Montgomery. They had four fights, and they both came out, you know, with two wins. And, in fact, two of their fights, I think it was two and three, they were voted the fight of the year in 1943 and again in 1944. And in, I think it was 1944 when Montgomery beat Bo Jack. Just 2 weeks, just 2 weeks before he beat Bo Jack for the title, he was knocked out by Bummy Davis at Madison Square Garden in the very first round. I mean, imagine a person getting knocked out and then 2 weeks later fighting for the world title. I mean, you know, that's unheard of. I mean, you know, that just don't even happen. And of course, Corrales and Castillo. I mean, that was one of the greatest fights of all time. I mean, you know, that especially the last round, the 10th round. I mean, Corrales was down a couple of times. His mouthpiece was out a couple of times. It probably would have been a 10-6 round if it lasted the whole round. But he got back up, and, you know, he landed a couple of good shots, and, you know, the rest is history. But lightweights, like I said, they...
The lightweight division, Henry, you know, has always been great. We'll turn the pages back in time. You know, I had the pleasure to meet Bo Jack down in Fifth Street Gym in Miami where Angelo had. We were all training down there, and I was young, and I was working the hand pads in the gym with Tim Witherspoon. And Bo Jack was in there. He seen me working the pads with him, and and the end of the round, Bo Jack told me, come here. He asked me a question. He said, what happens when he misses? I said, good point. I said,
what was that?
He
what
said,
happens
try,
when
he said, what happens when he misses the pad? Meaning all the time in a fight, you're not going to hit the pad.
Yeah.
Or hit the guy. What happens when he misses? He said, take that pad and pull it away. So what we did, I worked him a little bit on the pads, and Slim said, give the pads to Bo Jack to let him try. So Bo Jack went in and worked the pads with a young Tim Witherspoon. I was young, and Bo Jack was a senior man in Angelo Dundee's gym down there, Fifth Street Gym. But also, Ike Williams. Muhammad Ali picked up all of these great fighters around him. And Ike Williams in Deer Lake, Pennsylvania, used to stay up there in the bunk with all of us. And many nights I talked to Ike Williams. I used to talk to him around breakfast time. And when everybody come, we used to sit on the rocks and talk. And Ike Williams used to give me different pointers. Of about fighting and great fighters and talking that. You know, around Ollie's camp, there were all of these great fighters' names that Ollie had put on the rocks. And they had Ike Williams rock at one time there. And we sat, and he used to sit on the rock. We used to talk. And boy, oh boy, you're talking about a wealth of knowledge, a wealth of schooling, and about learning about the game, you know. Don't forget during that era when Ike Williams fought, you know, you had the mob influence
that was in
the boxing. And the mob guys were after Ike Williams. And Ike Williams talked to me about those tales of what happened and what he did when the mob and stuff were after him. They were trying to get him to lay down in different fights. Don't do this, don't do that. And he talked to me about that. that kind of influence that was in the game at that time and what happened. But that's for another show. But I did have the pleasure to meet those all-time greats. And Roberto Duran, we spent a lot of time with Roberto Duran in King's training camp for a long time. We used to talk a lot, Roberto, because I can talk Spanish a little bit. And
okay.
Roberto has already been funny. Just to give our listening audience some of the insights of what we're talking about, these all-time greats. I mean, they had personality, they had charisma, and boy, can they talk the game. They they understood
and could talk it. Yeah, I met Ike Williams myself because he actually lived in Patterson for a while, and he came to a few of the dinners that I was at, and I sat next to him, and I asked him a question about his record. Mm-hmm. I says, who's the first guy you ever fought as a pro? And he says, Carmen Fata. And I says, not really. He says, what do you mean? The record books say Carmen Fata. I say, yeah, well, the record books was wrong. It was a guy by the name of Carmen Fodi, and he was from Cliffwood Beach. Mm-hmm. And I actually had the newspaper article with me of the fight, you know, from back then, because I did some research and I knew he was going to be there. And he said, well, son of a gun, you know, he says, I thought it was Carmine Fata. And I said, well, Carmine Fata was fighting at Madison Square Garden, you know, in all these big arenas, you know, six rounders and everything like this. Why would he come to New Jersey to fight a guy that's fighting his pro debut and fight, I think it was only three rounds at the time, too. I said, why? And look at the weight. You know, he weighed 135 pounds a couple of days before he fought you. He fought somebody. Then a week or so later, he still weighed 135 pounds. When he fought you, he was in the 140s, you know. So, you know, it really wasn't him. But Ike Williams was really... really a nice guy. I mean, I enjoyed talking to him, and you know, we talked quite a bit at the table about, you know, who we thought was the best. I said, who's the best boxer you ever fought? And he says, now that he said, this is a question now. He says, the best pure boxer or the best fighter? I said, the best pure boxer. He says, believe it or not, the best pure boxer I ever fought was Tippy Larkin. And I said, Tippy Larkin.
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, he was sitting at the table. I don't know if he was sitting at our table, but next table over, because he was from New Jersey, and he was one of the good friends of mine. And he said, you knocked him out like in, you know, three or four rounds. He says, yeah. He says, but for the first two or three, I said, I couldn't hit the guy. He said, he was such a masterful. The only thing is, he had a glass jaw, and as soon as you hit him, you know, he got knocked out by. Mm-hmm. By Ike Williams and Henry Armstrong and Jenkins and a whole bunch of other guys, you know. But he was, like I said, he was a really nice individual. And you know, it's a shame how these big time fighters, you know, like Bo Jack, like going back to Bo Jack, mm-hmm. you know, there's a story about him. You know, when he was shining shoes, and Gus D'Amato came up, and Gus D'Amato says, hey. Get up. He says, you sit down. I'm going to shine your shoes. You know, he says, mm-hmm. Bo Jack doesn't shine my shoes. I'm going to shine Bo Jack's shoes. But, you know, it's a shame how these guys end up, you know. Here's a guy like Bo Jack.
He fought a lot of times
at Madison Square Garden, too. And, you know, he didn't have that much at the end. I mean, he was a shoeshine boy before, and then afterwards, he was shining shoes, you know, for a couple of bucks.
And the Eden Rock, a big hotel, were businessmen and stuff like that, and people forget at one time, shoeshining was big, you know, guys like to have the tip of the shoe sparkling shine where you could see yourself, and let me tell you, at the time when I met him. He was still doing that in the Eden Rock Hotel in Miami Beach. And we went over there. We had the pleasure to eat lunch and stuff with him and talk with him, you know, and walk with him and talk with him. Man, just an amazing guy when it come to knowing the game. You know, some people can fight the game. Some people don't know the game. Some people don't understand the game. But these guys could do it all. They could talk
yeah.
it. They could teach it. You know, they could fight it. And they understood it. And
yeah.
but the economics of it, lifestyle, you know, those guys love that flamboyant lifestyle. And that
yeah.
flamboyant lifestyle is what got a lot of fighters during that era and still a day. It's lifestyle trying to stay where everything's happening. And, you know, everything going out and nothing coming in, you know, it's going to make it bad. But fighters during that era weren't making the kind of money that they were making in this era. And I think what would be good, you're talking about the money and stuff like that. With Bojack, I'm going to tell you what Muhammad Ali taught me. He talked a lot, and he told me what happened to him with some of his money. It was called the Joe Louis Act. And next week, I think that would be good where we can talk about the Joe Louis Act and how it took a lot of fighters' money for the Joe Louis Law. And,
yeah, well,
you know, Ali said yeah. that law took 90% of his money with them 10 businessmen down there in Louisville, and that's why he
yeah.
said he had to get away from them, because they helped the IRS form that law against him, where 90% of his money was being taken away from him, and then he ended up with that. And when he was preaching and teaching in the camp, I sat and listened to that because it was real interesting. And I think that'll be a good show for next week too, you know. But
yeah.
right now we're talking about them great lightweights.
Yeah, well, that's why you know, talking about the money. You know, the money wasn't really there. That's why, you know, these guys like Willie Pep and Sugar Ray Robinson and Archie Moore and, you know, greats like that had over 200 fights. You know, today's day and age, they wouldn't be fighting that much. They had a fight just to put you know feed themselves, really. I mean, especially in the beginning. I mean, you know, they would fight every other week, sometime every week. I mean, the record for a fight, you know, number of fights in a year is 58. I mean, imagine fighting every week. You know, oh, it's Friday night, I got to fight tonight. You know, but that was the times. You know, like Floyd Mayweather, he made so much money, you know, millions just about every fight. Why should he fight more than once or twice a year when he's going
to
make so much
yeah,
money?
And it's hard to promote and drum up all that drama that Mayweather creates to get that kind of money. But in this modern era, you know, we're talking about lightweight. People forget also Julio Cesar Chavez was a great lightweight champion. And when you talk about Mayweather, him and Roger Mayweather, the uncle of Floyd Mayweather that used to train Floyd Mayweather Jr., you know, their great fights as light heavyweight. Lightweight champions
lightweight.
Were great.
Yeah.
But we got 90 seconds, Henry.
Well,
give us that
well,
number
Ibro,
one spot.
Ibro actually, Ibro actually had Chavez as number 11. So, you know, they rated him pretty high. I think they had him number one as junior welterweight, but they had him number 11 as a lightweight. So, you know, they didn't forget about him either. So, but you know, it's like I said, tonight's fight. I think every boxing fan will be glued to the TV. You know, hopefully it lives up to its billing. You know, hopefully it's, you know, that slugger that comes out and tries to knock the head off, you know, the boxer, and then the boxer dancing around and trying to elude the guy, and then opens up, you know, midway in a fight. And, you know, I just hope it's exciting, and because boxing needs something like this. You know, it needs a big shot in the arm, you know, and hopefully we'll get it tonight.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's bring Bob Murray back in here. Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
What time are they saying it's starting, the show?
I believe East Coast time it'll be probably around 11. So
we have 10 seconds. But hey, look, you can get it on your handheld devices and all that, because ESPN is streaming over their streaming platform. They're streaming the fights. You can get it if you have a tablet and all that. Just go to ESPN and hit the streaming platform. You can watch it there. And let's hope and pray that these numbers go up with this big fight tonight with ESPN. Boxing needs it, and we all need that. We all need the numbers to go up for boxing. With saying that, closing, I'd like to thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review radio show. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. And our radio aficionado, Bob Murray, took us on another carpet ride around the world. And our boxing historian, Henry Haskup, another great job, boy. Henry's on top of the game. He knows the 1-2 punch, second to none. And, boy, had he went down that fine list of historical lightweight champions as second to none. Let me tell you, that pencil that Henry Haskup is very sharp, but in this digital age, he got digital media that he's working and implanting that information on BoxRec, second to none, boy. And let me tell you, when you get a chance, when this normally around this time, we're gearing up for the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame. So we know the pandemic has affected us, the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame, but you got to come to the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame when the date comes out about when they're going to have it next year. Please do that. It's second to none. It's an amazing event. The foods are great. The people are great. Not only that, the president of the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame, Henry Haskup, he entertains you all night, and he's second to none, as he did tonight with the light heavyweights. Man, thank you for tuning in, and tune in next week as we travel the world for past, present, and future stars in the legend tales. Thank you.
Thank you.
See you next
Bye.
Week. All right.
Wow.
Bye.